So my talk is based on a series of papers done in collaboration with Chunshan Lin, Shinji Mukoyama, and Antonio De Felice. And my focus today will be on the homogeneous and isotropic universe solutions in this recently introduced massive gravity theory. I will start with a brief introduction, including some history, and then I will move on to discuss the self-accelerating solutions on these theories. And from the analysis of linear perturbations, we will see that there is this mysterious cancellation of the kinetic terms of 3 degrees of freedom. And finally, we will see that actually these degrees of freedom lead to some ghost instability at the nonlinear level. And finally, I will show a new solution which may evade this ghost issue. So now, there has been some recent activity in the massive gravity theory. So why is it interesting? First, there's this theoretical question whether one can write down a massive spin 2 theory which reduces smoothly to general relativity in the massless limit. Or to put it another way, are the predictions of general relativity stable against a small but non-vanishing mass? So this has been a question that has been around for quite some time. And on the other hand, there's also some observational motivation which kind of led to the recent activity and the eventual discovery of this theory in the last decade, which is obviously the dimming of the supernovae, which indicate there's an accelerated expansion at the late universe. And instead of using something like dark energy or cosmological constant, the idea is to associate this effect with the gravity sector by doing some large-scale modifications in general relativity. And massive gravity is one such way. And this was the main reason why the activity in the last few years. So the easiest thing you can do, the simplest mass term you can write down, was introduced by Pearson Pauli in 1939. And here the spin 2 particle is described by this H mu nu, which is nothing but the metric perturbations around Minkowski. And of course, this is a linear theory, and the kinetic term is just the quadratic part of the Einstein-Hilbert action. And this theory has the correct degrees of freedom. It's a massive spin 2 field theory, which gives you 5 polarizations of graviton. On the other hand, there's a problem where when you try to find the predictions for example, the bending of light, in the mass goes to zero limit, you end up with getting wrong predictions. So there's this famous Van Daan-Veltman-Zakharov discontinuity. And this discontinuity was shown to be evaded by Weinstein. So Weinstein noticed that the perturbation theory is actually breaking down at distances smaller than this characteristic radius, now called the Weinstein radius. And nonlinear effects take over, and they can recover the continuity with general relativity. So basically, when you have a sphere with radius of this radius, outside this region, you are in the weak field limit of some massive gravity theory, and you have Pearson Pauli theory. While inside, you have perturbation theory breaking down, nonlinear terms are taking over, and you end up with general relativity effectively inside. Unfortunately, so basically this tells us that we need to consider nonlinear extension of this type of theory. But unfortunately, generically, when you write down a nonlinear massive gravity theory, you end up with an additional degree of freedom, a 6th degree in addition to the 5 that are present in the massive spin 2 field. And this is the Boulware-Deser. This leads to the Boulware-Deser instability. Now, I will do a very simple counting argument, and it will basically be a basis of some of the things I will say later. It's a little simplistic, but it will probably give the idea on why we have this extra degree. So when we look, so basically the spin 2 particle is within this metric perturbations, and since we will do cosmology, it is very useful to decompose the metric perturbations with respect to the way they transform under three-dimensional spatial rotations. So basically, we will have 4 scalar degrees, 4 transverse vector degrees, and 2 transverse and traceless tensor degrees. So these cover all the 10 degrees of freedom within the metric. But we know not all of these are physical or dynamical. First of all, the zero mu components are non-dynamical. They enter the action without any time derivatives. So this allows us to remove two scalars and two vector degrees. And let me open a parenthesis here. In general relativity, in the masses theory, we also have general coordinate invariance, so which allows us to do a coordinate transformation such that we can remove two scalar and two vector degrees, which are redundant. So in general relativity, when you sum everything, you end up with only two tensor degrees in the gravity sector, which are the two gravity wave polarizations. But in a generic massive theory, you do not have the general coordinate invariance anymore. So basically, you have two scalars, two vectors, and two tensor degrees in the metric perturbations. So that is the sixth degree is one of these. And basically, the existence of this blue-ware desert ghost is related to the fact that we're using metric perturbations to describe the spin 2 particle. And it turns out in the choice of Pearson poly here, these are the two possible terms you can write down in a quadratic massive term. And this relative coefficient is actually making sure that this ghost degree is canceled. So, okay, let me take a break for this. So the idea is to find a way to eliminate this ghost degree at higher order, but this is extremely difficult. But the major development was done in 2003, which was the formulation of the covariant effective field theory. So we know mass term breaks general coordinate invariance, but you can always introduce some redundant degrees of freedom, which can revive the gauge invariance. So this is done in the way of the Stueckelberg trick. So you introduce four scalar degrees and one per broken degree. And then you introduce some covariantized version of the metric perturbations in such a way that it has this form, basically. And so basically, we introduced some new degrees, and we have now a gauge invariant theory. And if you choose the gauge, for instance, if you choose this so-called unitary gauge where the Stueckelberg fields are coinciding with the coordinates, then you see that this capital H reduces to small h, which was in the formulation of the Pearson poly theory. And there's also the discovery of this so-called decoupling limit, which basically turns off the interactions such that you are able to see what happens to the Boulware desert degree. And this Boulware desert ghost is actually associated with the helicity zero part of the Stueckelberg perturbations. So the longitudinal part of the Stueckelberg perturbations are actually identified as the helicity zero part. So in this decoupling limit, then, we are able to identify what the Boulware desert ghost is. So the cancellation of this term may become easier at higher orders with this formulation. And this was successfully completed by Deram and Gabadadze in 2010. So the idea is to write down a generalized version of Pearson poly. So you have the Einstein-Hilbert action, and then you add some mass terms, which are constructed out of the physical metric and this covariantized metric perturbations. So you just write down every possible term at each order. At second order, we already know the Pearson poly construction works. But at third order, like we have some arbitrary coefficients in terms of all possible terms, and you do this to higher orders. And the brackets here are just trace operations defined in this way. And in the decoupling limit, this covariantized metric perturbations actually is related to the Boulware desert ghost degree or the helicity zero degree in this fashion. And once you use this, it turns out that the Pearson poly combination is a total derivative in the decoupling limit. So the logic is to do the same for higher order terms. So at cubic order also, you try to tune the coefficients such that this is a total derivative in the decoupling limit, etc. And interestingly, after the quintic order, you end up seeing that requiring that this is a total derivative actually makes it identically zero. And this happens to all the other orders. So you end up with only the cubic and the quartic order that you have to really tune. And afterwards, it becomes identically zero. So of course, this is just still the decoupling limit version of the theory. But it is possible to extend this, at least generalize this from this approach to away from the decoupling limit in a more general way. And this was the Deram-Gabadadze-Tolle work. So I will do some definitions which I will use here. So there may be some things that are like repeated, but so the idea is to impose Poincaré symmetry in the Stückelberg sector, in the field space. And that means this line element is an invariant. And from this, you can define a space-time tensor in this way, which we call the fiducial metric. And you also have the physical metric, G mu nu. And you can use these two to write down a mass term. And in the end, the most general massive theory can be written in this way with three parameters, the mass of graviton and alpha 3 and alpha 4, which are two dimensionless parameters. Here, everything is built out of this K tensor, which is a building block, and it has this funny square root shape. And the major point is that you're writing down this theory by generalizing the decoupling limit theory. So basically, K mu nu in the decoupling limit reduces to d mu d nu pi, which pi was the helicity zero part of the Stückelberg fields. And once you do this, you can immediately see that these combinations become total derivatives. And of course, this was just built out of the decoupling limit, but it turns out that even away from the decoupling limit, there is still 5 degrees of freedom. So you do not have the Boulware desert mode anymore. So this is the theory.
So does this change with dimensionality?
Yes. So basically, this is the four-dimensional case. At 5 dimensions, you have a fifth-order term also.
Term. Many dimensions you'll stop as you go up to the...
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you can actually see that the structure is like a determinant structure. Yeah. And once you have 5 dimensions, you will have another index in the Levi-Civita tensors, basically.
So is there some obvious reason why this kills the BD ghost?
I'm not sure. I mean, I can think of some mathematical reasons, but I do not have a physical intuition why this happens.
Does it kill it for any alpha 3, alpha 4?
Sorry?
Any choice of alpha 3, alpha 4?
No, these are completely free, yeah.
Yeah. So if they were both 0, you'd still kill them.
Exactly, yeah. Whatever value they have, it kills it. Okay. Now, we have a massive theory now with 5 degrees of freedom. And one of the original motivations to building this theory was to address the dark energy problem. So it is now quite logical to ask the question whether one can write down a consistent cosmology in this theory. And our strategy is as follows. We will look for the simplest solutions in the simplest version of the theory. We will check if it works. By works, I mean, does it have continuity with general relativity? Is it stable? Does it give you the correct thermal history of the universe? If it works, then it's okay. I will just be able to use the predictions to constrain the parameters of the theory. If it doesn't work, I will have to relax either the solutions or the theory itself. And so when I say relaxing the theory, there are many options. So first extension you can do is to drop the Poincaré symmetry in the field space. That is, this eta AB, which was Minkowski, can become anything. And when you do this trivial extension, it turns out, actually, the same construction with the square root form actually still goes free. So it is still free, at least free of the sixth degree, let me say. So, and also, you can make this fiducial metric to be dynamical. So you can add an Einstein-Hilbert term also for the fiducial metric. And that is the bigravity theory. And it has been shown that this mass term, which now becomes an interaction term between the two metrics, is also conserves its form, and it's still free of the sixth degree. And once you have two gravities, you can, of course, have three or more. And there are people who are working on ways to remove the sixth degree of freedom. Another path is to introduce some dynamics, but not directly to F mu nu, but through some other scalar fields which are dynamical. And this has been also explored. And this list is still growing. Some people are combining different extensions, et cetera. But in this talk, I will only allow the extensions of the first type. So in some sense, I will only consider massive gravity. I will not consider bigravity or these dynamical cases. And it will turn out that this generic fiducial metric will not really matter for the types of solutions that I will consider. Now, so what about cosmology? Obviously, we want a homogeneous and isotropic solution, which has the correct thermal history. But there is another non-trivial requirement I put forward. That is, we want to preserve homogeneity and isotropy also for linear perturbations. So I want the equation of motion for the perturbations to be homogeneous and isotropic as well. So in general relativity, this is immediate. If you have an isotropic and homogeneous universe, your perturbations also propagate in a background that is homogeneous and isotropic. But in this case, it's not true. What the second condition is telling me is to have also a Friedman-Robertson-Walker ansatz for the fiducial metric. So basically, both physical and the fiducial metrics I will take to be of the Friedman-Robertson-Walker form. Here, the first line is the physical metric, the capital N is the lapse, and A is the scale factor for the physical metric, and this omega ij is the three-dimensional metric for a space with constant curvature k. And this is the fiducial metric. Small n and alpha are the lapse and scale factor analogs in the fiducial metric. And of course, this choice for the fiducial metric is not a unique choice. In fact, there are some very interesting examples where they considered different fiducial metrics, and they found completely Friedman-Robertson-Walker type physical metric. And in these cases, some of them are also inhomogeneous fiducial metrics. And that means although the background dynamics is homogeneous and isotropic for the physical metric, there is a broken Friedman-Robertson-Walker symmetry. But this is broken in the Stueckelberg sector in this case. And although at the background level you do not see this effect, the perturbations will propagate in a background where there is some broken isotropy, for instance. So for now, I will keep this condition, basically. So I will keep this ansatz. We will see if it works or not. If it doesn't work, I will have to relax this. Yeah, this actually the same reason is that if I want to find such a solution, I also need to have this type of fiducial metric. They basically, if I try, for example, open universe solution here, and if I try a closed universe metric in the physical metric, I do not get a solution. So they also adapt to each other. Yes.
So you mentioned that if observations do not agree with this choice, you could, by changing the fiducial metric, you could make it agree.
In principle, yes, but...
So in which sense, my question is, in which sense is this theory predictive? Because if I have an infinitely dimensional space of possible fiducial metrics...
I'm sorry.
The number of possible fiducial metrics is infinite.
Infinite, yeah, exactly.
Right, so then I don't have a predictive theory, right? I can, by choosing the fiducial metric any way I want,
that's
I can match
true.
With whatever...
That's true, but you have to start somewhere. So we're looking for the simplest thing we can do. So we're looking for something that looks... very much like the FRW we know from GR. So we're trying to find something that has the same symmetry. And we're looking whether it works or not. I mean, there are probably ways, like if your fiducial metric has some dynamics, maybe this would not be too much of a problem. I mean, the dynamics of the fiducial metric can go to some more preferred metric. But in the case of when it's non-dynamical, it is basically defining what your theory is. So a different fiducial metric means you are working in a different theory. So we're looking at some theory where I can do this, basically, some simple theory. So, okay. So the simplest thing is obviously the flat Friedman-Robertson-Walker, and the simplest theory is the Minkowski fiducial one. And this has been tried immediately, and it turns out that there's no such solution and by D'Amico and collaborators. On the other hand, if you relax the assumption about the spatial curvature, then you end up seeing open Friedman-Robertson-Walker type solutions. And here I'm showing the two forms of the physical and fiducial metrics. It's just exactly the same as before. The only change now is the relation between the lapse and the scale factor in the fiducial metric. Since we are working with Minkowski fiducial metric, this relation is fixed by the curvature invariance of the fiducial metric. So this is basically, you can start with Minkowski in some twiddle coordinates and do some field coordinate transformation, and you can end up with the Friedman-Robertson-Walker form, which has an open space. And So basically, from this argument, I can all immediately say that there's no closed solution for the Minkowski fiducial metric, because I cannot write Minkowski in a form which is like closed Friedman-Robertson-Walker-Chagg. So of course, I'm just talking about the ansatz here. When we look at the equations, first of all, the equation of motion for the Stückelberg is actually giving us a constraint which defines three branches of solutions. So the equation of motion is of this form. The first one, basically, the first solution is like this. And if you remember from the previous slide, you can see this relation is exactly the same as Minkowski in open chart. So basically, what this says is that G mu nu is Minkowski. So this branch does not give any cosmological expansion. On the other hand, the second branch is basically defined by this quadratic polynomial, where the argument is the ratio of the two scale factors. And you'll find two solutions to this. Basically, the ratio of the two scale factors is constant, and the constant is related to the two parameters in your action in this way. And the main point is that for a flat space, this branch, is the second branch, is not present. Only the first branch remains. This is why people missed this branch before when they started from a flat ansatz. And another thing you can do is, so we have, with the Minkowski fiducial, we only have a flat, an open Friedman-Robertson-Walker. On the other hand, if you extend the field space, there may be some other options. Now this is exactly the same ansatz for the two metrics. Now small n and alpha will be related to each other by whatever the field space metric is, or whatever the curvature invariants are. And if, for example, you consider a de Sitter fiducial metric, we know de Sitter can be brought into a form where you can have flat, open, or closed Friedman-Robertson-Walker. You can do such coordinate transformation. And then you can have probably the solutions that are both closed, flat, and open. The only cost here would be to introduce a new scale. In the case of de Sitter, this would be the expansion rate of the fiducial metric. And basically, you can then have a spatial curvature with either side. And for the generic case, you can look at the equation of motion for the Stückelbergs. It's like this. And the first branch is telling you that the scale factor times the expansion rate for the physical metric is equal to the same quantity in the fiducial metric. So this is kind of a generalization of the case in Minkowski. On the other hand, the second branch is exactly the same as in the Minkowski fiducial. So this x plus minus, which is the ratio of the two scale factors, is actually exactly the same quantity. Now, for the first branch, though, the things are a little different. Even qualitatively, things are different. For the Minkowski fiducial, we were getting no expansion, because the metric was also forced to be Minkowski. But for instance, in the case of the de Sitter fiducial, you can have some non-trivial cosmology in the physical metric. Unfortunately, this case has been studied, and it turns out that if you wish to have continuity with general relativity, one of the 5 degrees of freedom of the graviton turns out to be a ghost. Or if you try to avoid the ghost, you end up losing continuity with general relativity. And for things like this, we are basically are going to ignore the first branch of solution from now on, and we will concentrate on the second branch of solutions. Now, for this branch, the evolution is, this is the equivalent of the Friedman equation for this theory. You have this curvature term. We also added some generic conserved matter. And you end up with an effective cosmological constant, which is given in this strange form. One important point to note is that this is generic for any fiducial metric. And whatever scales you are introducing with the different fiducial metric does not enter into this form, basically. It's independent of, for example, the expansion rate of your fiducial metric. And you can look at the two branches, and you can see that you can have either sign of the cosmological constant in each branch, although there's some preference of sign apparently in some branches. The main point is that you can have this self-acceleration. And if you're in some generic point in the parameter space, you can expect this to be of order 1. And then like, if the whole accelerated expansion today is related to this mass effect, that means the mass of graviton should be of the order of expansion rate today. So it's very nice, it's very clean, but unfortunately, things are never this simple. The square region, okay, there are, so these are the places where the solution is not defined. So this region, in this region, this square root is negative. And in the square region, the x, the ratio of the two scale factors, which is by construction positive, is actually, it turns out to be negative here. So these two regions, there's an equivalent region here and here, are excluded. There's no solution there. The squared region here and the squared region here are excluded for the same reason.
Yeah, but yeah, not the
same. No, 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 yeah, yeah. Okay. So, of course, this is not the point to stop. First of all, the lack of the Boulware desert ghost does not guarantee that the system is free of ghosts. This is something that Higuchi has shown for a linear theory around the De Sitter reference metric, and you end up with having a ghost degree in one of the 5 polarizations of graviton. So one needs to check whether this type of problem is existing or not. Also, the scalar sector may still have some couplings with the matter sectors, and it may give rise to some potential conflict. So one needs to also make sure that the Wendstein mechanism can work. And even if these two are working, we still need to get some predictions so that we can just distinguish this specific solution with the specific given fiducial metric or some range of fiducial metrics from other models. So for these reasons, we're going to introduce perturbations. Okay, this is a very busy slide, but I hope I can go through. So this first line is just, we're basically introducing perturbations around the Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric. So phi, beta I, and hij are just perturbations. We're also perturbing the Stueckelberg field. And we're including some arbitrary, generic matter degrees, some independent set of degrees that we do not really specify what they are. And of course, as is done in the standard cosmological theory of perturbations, we are doing the decomposition with respect to the three-dimensional rotational symmetry of Friedman-Robertson-Walker. So basically, all of the stuff that have one index is decomposed into a longitudinal and transverse parts in this way. And this capital D is the covariant derivative associated with the spatial metric. And here, this gamma ij is the tensor mode, basically. So this is the decomposition we're using. And of course, we have a gauge invariant theory. So you may be tempted to fix a gauge and end up with less degrees of freedom. But it turns out it's better to go to some gauge invariant variables so that you can follow what degree is coming from where. Yeah. This is no for any background, any background that you can write in some coordinate system which looks like Friedman-Robertson-Walker. Yeah. And since the background really does, since the background at the end, the dynamics does not really depend on what the fiducial metric is. And so basically, we're defining some gauge invariant variables. First, we are defining a set of gauge invariant variables which do not refer to Stueckelberg perturbations. This first line is the gauge invariant version of matter perturbations. And for one scalar field, this reduces to the Sasaki-Mukano variable. And you then have 4 more degrees of freedom, which are just coming from the metric. So basically, this set contains only metric perturbations and matter field perturbations. And they have analogs in general relativity. So this is the main point. On the other hand, they are not enough to span all of the degrees of freedom. We have 4 more degrees of freedom, which are built out of the Stueckelberg fields. And these will be associated with the new degrees of freedom that come from the mass term. Yeah?
So you got your cosmological constant from the combination of these parameters in the scalar field and the region. Could you have an additional cosmological constant?
Sure, yeah. So basically, when I'm saying
this, this cosmological constant that you got didn't depend on the background, independent of HF, but could you have another cosmological constant just, you know, from the matter sector in your?
Yeah, exactly.
Cancellation.
The situation at the background level is exactly like Friedman, Robertson, Walker with some effect. With some, you know, if you write a. Yeah.
But you could add another constant onto this.
Sure. I mean, this rho can be anything. It's just the only condition when we were driving this was that it's conserved. So that was all.
So maybe the question is, you're not solving the cosmological constant problem?
No, we're not solving the cosmological constant problem, but we're just adding something that gives rise to late time acceleration. So we're assuming that cosmological constant problem is solved somehow. There are like this deep gravitation stuff. It may be in a different branch, but you know, you can, I guess, assume that it happens at some early stage or something, then you switch to the second branch or something. Okay. So where am I? Okay. Now, when you use these definitions of gauge invariant variables and you write down your action, you end up with this structure. The first part contains the Einstein-Hilbert action, the matter action, and an action that corresponds to the effective cosmological constant. And the main point is that this part depends only on the variables that are built out of the metric and matter perturbations. And on the other hand, you also have the mass contribution, which contains the Stückelberg perturbations. And the only common variable between the two parts is the gravity waves, or the tensor mode. And as a result, you end up with a modified dispersion relation for the tensor modes, which acquire a time-dependent mass. On the other hand, a more strange thing to notice here is that these degrees of freedom, psi pi, e pi, and fi pi, actually do not have any kinetic terms. So this is the strange thing. So all of the degrees of freedom that are introduced by the mass term have vanishing kinetic. So we were, in the beginning, we were hoping to have one degree of freedom which had a vanishing kinetic term because we wanted the Boulware-Desert ghost to go away. But now we have too much over cancellation. And it is strange, but it's not unique. And there has been some other cases where this type of cancellation occurred in the context of massive gravity. And all of these cases have some kind of self-accelerating background. So then the idea is to understand what really happens to these degrees of freedom. What is the fate of these degrees? So one thing you can say that they are infinitely strongly coupled if they have a zero kinetic term. But if there is some large mass gap or if there is some way to extend this by some, you know, introduce some symmetries that would make the higher order kinetic terms vanish as well, then you can then integrate these out and you end up with the same degrees of freedom as in general relativity. Then all of the problematic things associated with the scalar graviton become irrelevant, like the Higuchi bound or the Weinstein mechanism. And the main signature would be in the gravity wave signal. And there are some attempts to construct a theory just using some extended symmetries. And we have done a paper about the gravity wave signals of these. If you're interested, you can look it up. But I'm not going to talk about this. But the main point is that we need to go beyond the linear order to understand which of these cases is realized. And but instead of doing that, we did something else. So it is clear that the cancellation is associated with some symmetry we're invoking with this background. So there's something with the symmetry of this background that is making these extra degrees go away. And so basically, instead of computing the high order kinetic terms, what we're going to do is we will slightly break the isotropy and then compute the quadratic order action. And the small deviation from the isotropy in the background will be interpreted as some homogeneous perturbation in the isotropic solution. And this will allow us to obtain some information from the nonlinear action. And with this philosophy, we are basically we considered the simplest anisotropic extension of Friedman-Robertson-Walker, which is a Bianchi 1 metric with some residual isotropy in the YZ plane. And here, sigma basically measures the amount of isotropy, anisotropy between the two directions, and we will take this to be very small eventually. And as for the fiducial metric, as I told before, we want this solution. We want to use this solution to say something about the isotropic case. So we will be taking the isotropic limit anyway. And we do not really want to change the fiducial metric because a different fiducial metric means a different theory. So we will just stick to the FRW type of solutions. And also, what we are interested in is the stability of the gravity sector. So there's not much need to include any matter sectors. And also, it's technically very, very complicated. So the strategy is, So when we were working with Friedman, Robertson, Walker, we did this decomposition with respect to three-dimensional rotational symmetry. The advantage of that is that scalar, tensor, and vector modes are decoupled at quadratic order. But here we have, you know, this symmetry, this rotational symmetry is now broken at the background level. So this will not really help us. There will be some couplings. On the other hand, we still have some symmetry on the YZ plane. And what we will do is we will decompose the perturbations with respect to two-dimensional rotations around the x-axis, basically. So in the end, the gravity sector will contain three two-dimensional scalar modes and two two-dimensional vector modes. And then we will just write down the quadratic action and integrate out non-dynamical degrees and hopefully obtain an action which contains 3 degrees decoupled from another action that contains 2 degrees. And of course, since these things, these three scalars, for instance, will be coupled to each other, we need to diagonalize the system. So I will just show you the results. It's impossible to go to technical details. But if you're interested, of course, we can go into. So this is the summary of the result. Here, the kappa is going to be the eigenvalue of the kinetic matrix in the series of small anisotropy expansion. And the omega will be the frequency after doing the diagonalization. So it will be the dispersion relation of the modes. So in the 2D vector sector, we have 2 degrees of freedom. One has order one, the kinetic term in the small anisotropy expansion. And from its dispersion relation, we understand that this is one of the gravity wave polarizations in the isotropic limit. On the other hand, we have another mode, which has an order sigma kinetic term, which basically vanishes in the isotropic limit. And it has this type of dispersion relation. And in order to have this, you know, avoid a ghost in this case, so in order to make this kappa 2 positive, you end up having a time-dependent condition, which contains also the expansion rate of the fiducial metric. And it is a very model-dependent and background-dependent condition. But I will not go into the details of this condition because of the situation in the 2D scalar sector is much more worse. So first, we have another, the second polarization of gravity waves. But we also have 2 degrees of freedom, which have kinetic terms of order sigma, and they are explicitly opposite of each other. So one of these degrees is a ghost. And when you look at the dispersion relations, you see that the dispersion relation is completely coming from the momentum term. So the smaller momentum you go, the smaller the omega is. So you do not have a mass gap. You do not have a lower, like a minimum frequency. So there's no, you cannot even integrate doubt from the low energy effective theory. So there's not much way you can get rid of these. So this basically the solution is unstable. So here we are basically, what we did was, in this picture, the quadratic kinetic term we found for small anisotropy is actually corresponds to a cubic kinetic term of this type with one of the momentum being zero, basically. It's like a squeezed case. And that tells us that the homogeneous and isotropic solutions in massive gravity have this ghost instability which arises from the cubic order action. And this conclusion is valid for this plus minus self-accelerating branch of solutions with arbitrary fiducial metric. And Guido D'Amico considered our solution, and he did a more honest calculation. He did actually calculate cubic order terms, and he verified that the kinetic term reappears at cubic order. And in the variants of the theory, like in bigravity and quasi-dilaton, there are some similar self-accelerating solutions which have vanishing kinetic term behavior. So the question is whether they are unstable or not also. That's an interesting question.
Sure.
Well, the point is that I see. So at least from our analysis, we are able to see that the kinetic terms, one of these is always negative, is what we can say. Does it have any relation with your question?
I guess I'm wondering if, I think I'm wondering about goes back to an earlier question. Goes back to a question I wanted to ask before but didn't. So the fiducial metric and the physical metric are related by this transformation that involves these Stueckelberg fields, but it looks basically like a coordinate transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, isn't that saying that the fiducial metric and the action and the physical metric have to be isometric? I mean, the fact that you can write down...
Wait. What do you mean the physical metric and the... No, they're not related by a coordinate transformation.
Not a physical coordinate transformation, but a formula that looks just like a formula.
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean, but you mean this one?
Yeah.
The phi r basic, but this is basically a coordinate transformation of the field space metric, which defines the theory itself.
But if eta bar and f are related by that, then mm-hmm. that means they're isometric because you can always take as your coordinate transformation that the phi is the coordinate. So, I guess I'm just wondering
I'm not sure if I understand because there's no physical metric involved here in this case.
Well, maybe
we can talk about this later.
So maybe I can comment something. This is related to your last slide. So just because you have unstable modes in around some background, that doesn't mean that, or we have ghosts around some background, doesn't mean necessarily that the theory is sick. It just means that the background is sick.
Obviously, that's true. Yeah.
Unless it's true, the arbitrarily high frequency.
Well, I mean, I'm saying this is something. This says something about that background.
I thought the answer to the previous question was this doesn't this. Goes up to arbitrarily high frequency. And then as long as any background is smooth, if you've got an instability there, it will always be there for any background.
But it's not for any background. It's sigma appears in the dispersion relation. So it's only for Bianchi type 1.
No. Wait. Why do you say that? I mean...
Well, that sigma is something...
The background, when I say background, I mean the homogeneous anisotropic solution.
Yeah.
Not the anisotropic solution. I mean,
sigma is... the anisotropy parameter, right?
Sure, but you can interpret this as, if you take it to be small of the order of perturbations, for instance, you can interpret this as some homogeneous perturbation in the isotropic solution. That's why I'm interpreting this as some cubic order kinetic term. So what I have is a quadratic kinetic term times sigma.
But, and that's my point. So that kind of interpretation leads to the fact that perturbation theory is not valid, because these are positive. But that's all that it is. Just that perturbation theory is not a good thing to do around this background. It doesn't say that it's...
That the background is sick?
It doesn't say it's sick, it's just perturbation theory breaks down. That's what I'm
okay. I don't really see why it would...
Why would it break down? I don't see why that falls.
Yeah.
Well, instability always means that the background is not good. If you have... So if you interpret ghosts as instabilities, if that's the sickness of ghosts, that only says that the background around you are perturbing is a sick background. Doesn't necessarily mean that the theory itself is sick. So I think to show that the theory is sick is that you should show that perturbation theory around any background is sick.
Sure,
yeah.
I agree with you partially.
I might challenge that because if theory has one or more backgrounds as a solution that are unstable, that are otherwise physically reasonable, that's not good for the theory. Means it's a possible configuration of the world that this theory gives is one that's unstable.
But if you said every possible configuration for the world is unstable, then that's not the point.
That's worse,
yeah.
But it doesn't mean this, you know.
Could
I mean, do you murder somebody or do you just wound them? It's still bad.
No, but I see, my point is that perturbation theory does break down all the time. It doesn't mean, like in QCD, in infrared, you cannot use perturbation theory. Doesn't mean that the theory is sick. It just means that you don't know how to do that, but you need to come up with it.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that Searle's theory is unstable either. It just means you can't trust the calculation. But to find instability is IL-VCL, that's the same.
Nyash point is just a simple thing that if you have, if you're perturbing about the potential at the wrong point, you might see a negative map.
Sure, sure, fair enough. But it also doesn't necessarily be. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it may be,
but
it may not be.
Yeah, so I have a question. So if you take sigma to be extremely small, so it is a perturbation of the homogeneous, can you choose perturbations in the physical metric that are well behaved for an arbitrarily long time? Do you know the answer?
I'm not sure if I get it. Sorry. If you take sigma to be small.
Take sigma to be small, so
okay.
You're perturbing about the background metric. Can you find a configuration of perturbations in the physical metric that's well behaved for a long period of time?
I don't think it is possible. That's the thing I mean, there are 2 degrees of freedom, and one of these is already stable. So you're asking me about the time scale of the stability?
Well,
or
what I'm wondering is that maybe, is this all this saying is you can't try to impose a homogeneous background metric, pick an anisotropic, sorry, a homogeneous physical metric, and you pick an anisotropic background.
I'm sorry, can you repeat? I'm kind of not really getting it.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if this instability is just reflecting the fact that that maybe it's not possible to have your choice of a background metric with isotropic homogeneous.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I will talk about this, actually. Yeah,
so
you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So I was thinking if you can show that in the limit of the perturbations, you can find a set of perturbations that are well behaved, that would show you the direction of what the correct physical metric you should have given that background.
So you're talking about breaking the isotropy in the fiducial metric sector, maybe, or something like that? Or
in the physical metric.
In the physical metric.
Yeah.
No, I think in the physical metric, if you have some small anisotropy, you end up with this situation. I don't think there is much you can do. The main point is that I'm expanding around the solutions I know of the self-accelerating Friedman-Robertson-Walker solutions, basically. This is the expansion I'm doing. I'm solving the background equations of motion around these well-known solutions for small anisotropy. Sorry, yeah.
So how unstable is it? Like, if it's only a little bit unstable and the universe lasts long enough before you collapse into a catastrophe.
But this is already a big problem, isn't it? I mean, this is you end up with having a negative kinetic energy for some modes.
Yeah, and that can be
so no matter what, you're okay. All right, sorry.
That can be made arbitrarily high frequency, right? So that's something.
That, all right, that's back to you. So it's
you're
in big trouble.
You can't live with that. Though.
Uh-huh.
Right. It's not clear because this is a ghost instability. So you have to actually add a linear coupling to actually see the instability because at the linear level, these modes don't talk to each other.
This is again some picture. Basically, we are too lazy to do nonlinear calculations, honest nonlinear calculations. So basically, we are considering a quadratic situation, but we're basically getting some idea from the nonlinear case. Yeah.
So you remind me in one second. You know, to me, it doesn't seem that there's any connection between doing linear perturbation theory about analysis background and doing full cubic perturbation about homogeneous background.
Yeah.
You're sort of assuming something.
So
they see different things.
I mean, things that are anisotropic will be generated, when you're considering perturbations. So you can always have, it's basically just any type of small deformation of your metric can be okay with the, with some perturbations, and in the perturbed version of the theory. And basically, since we have something small times the kinetic term. We are basically choosing the option of saying that this small thing is just k equals zero, like the homogeneous part of some perturbation. And then it just gives us some idea on the type of terms, which are like phi, phi dot, phi dot.
It's the cubic calculation is the real thing that matters. This is just a
I think when you do the cubic calculation, you will get the ghost, basically.
Right. I just couldn't see a direct connection in the calculation.
Yeah, this is a very, very simplified version.
But don't you agree that the small anisotropy, if an FNW or a BNQ, the small anisotropy is like perturbation on FNW, like infinite wavelength?
No, I don't. I mean, the question one is you take a cubic action about homogeneous matter. The question is you have to work it out and look at the interaction to it and see is that the same formally as doing linear perturbation about anisotropy and BNQ matter? It's possible if you do the calculations.
I see. Yeah. There's some calculation with the cubic, like a honest to God calculation, Gamico. Yeah, but they are doing some approximation, so they are not able to explicitly use the background solution as we did. So, but the thing they are basically proving is that there's a cubic kinetic term. Which is already have some problems by itself.
The idea is to form that looks very close to what we came up
with. No, it's just he verified their cubic. As far as I know.
And of course, form that cubic term, terms you get by.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they are basically, you know, two derivatives times one term. It's a different language. Unfortunately, the calculation we did, we did it like a, in a like proper decomposition. Yeah, but the way he did is a little different, and it's hard to translate, unfortunately. But they are in agreement in that sense. Okay. So what can you do, basically? So it is clear that there is a problem with the homogeneous anisotropic solution. So what type of solution can you have? It doesn't mean that the cosmologies are not allowed in the massive gravity theory. So one option may be to relax the theory such that you have dynamics in the fiducial metric. Obviously, the types of extended theories like bigravity and quasi-dilaton have self-accelerating solutions which have this vanishing kinetic term behavior. But there is also the analog of the first branch of solutions that I threw away. Maybe the dynamics of the fiducial metric may help resolve the conflict between the Higuchi bound and the Weinstein mechanism. So this is one option. Another option is to find some new symmetry that can naturally lead to the cancellation of these kinetic terms. And unfortunately, this is not a very easy thing to do, like to have some kind of symmetry that works at nonlinear order. But there are some promising candidates, like there's this partially massless gravity by Claudio de Rome and Sebastian Coetel. And they did find some symmetry which works at the decoupling limit at any order, but it's not clear whether it works also at every order away from the decoupling limit. But there are some people who are going in this direction as well. Then, in this case, things become extremely simple, because you do not have the scalar graviton, you only have the vector graviton and tensor graviton. But the option we will adopt, at least here, is, you know, we started with a fiducial metric that had a Friedman-Robertson-Walker type symmetry. And now we are at the point where we need to break this FRW symmetry in the fiducial metric. So I told you in the beginning that it's still possible to have a homogeneous anisotropic physical metric where either a homogeneity or isotropy is broken in this Stueckelberg sector. And there are such examples. And Guido D'Amico has considered two such examples. One, that is a homogeneous Friedman-Robertson-Walker that they found. And also the Koyaman-Stasinato's inhomogeneous de Sitter solution. And he found that there's, again, a cancellation at quadratic order of the kinetic terms, even for these solutions. And also at cubic order, the kinetic terms reappear. So it seems like, you know, these are inhomogeneous solutions, but they are also spherically symmetric. So it seems like spherical symmetry is still not enough to break this situation. And if you, on the other hand, lose spherical symmetry, you have an extremely challenging calculation that waits for you. On the other hand, in our case, we had anisotropy, and we still had some symmetry in the background, some two-dimensional rotational symmetry, which helped us a lot to at least decouple parts of the action. And in our analysis, anisotropy was introduced only as a technical tool, but it allowed us to see that the kinetic terms at quadratic order are now non-matched. And so instead of choosing them to be small, the anisotropy is small, the idea is that basically you can find a parameter space where you do not have ghosts if you have some finite amount of anisotropy. And this is the next step that we will do if I have time. I have 1 minute. Okay, so okay. So the idea is again to consider Bianchi 1 metric with a finite amount of anisotropy where sigma now can be anything. And again, we take the fiducial metric to be the sitter here. So basically, the expansion rate is constant. And we're looking at the vacuum configuration, and we're trying to look for the fixed points defined by a constant expansion rate, so the de Sitter physical metric, constant ratio of the two scale factors, and also some isotropy in the expansion. And when you do use these solutions, use these, this requirement, the Einstein equations become just algebraic equations. And once you drop the isotropic fixed points and points that give you some non-trivial relation between parameters of the theory, you end up with this simple relation between the three parameters. This just fixes one equation, and then you can use the remaining equations to fix x and h. So this is one way to find the anisotropic fixed point. And of course, we need to look for stability. So we perturb these three variables around their fixed point value. And it turns out you can actually reduce the equations of motion such that you have this second order equation for the perturbations around the fixed point for the anisotropy. And the friction part is already positive. And the stability basically is satisfied if you have this mass term, which is a function of the mass. Alpha 3 and alpha 4. And if the mass square is positive, you have a stable local stability. So the idea is to find a fixed, find some parameters which satisfy this condition, and then do some numerical simulations for checking the global stability. So we chose these parameters, which lead to a fixed point given in this way. So basically, what this means is that the physical expansion rates, of the physical metric is 0.8 mg, basically. So it's of order, the mass of the graviton is taken to be of order of the expansion rate in this case. And in the left, in the horizontal axis, we have the anisotropy, and the magnitude is increasing when you go to left. In the vertical axis is the time derivative of the anisotropy, which is basically the shear scalar, more or less. And obviously, I mean, you can see that there's some flow towards the fixed point here from the numerical simulations for these set of parameters. So so the main point, when we are defining the fixed point, we already chose it to be to have isotropic expansion. In general relativity, isotropic expansion means isotropy, because if you have constant anisotropy, you can always do a field redefinition such that you remove this constant anisotropy. But here, if you do such a coordinate transformation, you will move this anisotropy to the fiducial metric. So what you will have an isotropic background, but the fiducial metric will be anisotropic and can, in principle, be probed by the perturbations. And this is the reason for our confusing choice of name, anisotropic Friedman-Robertson walker. As I said, this is an oxymoron in general relativity. So we have finally some nonlinear theory of massive gravity, which seems to contain the correct degrees of freedom. On the other hand, the theory allows for self-accelerating solutions, which are homogeneous and isotropic, but these suffer from some nonlinear instability. And this conclusion is valid for any fiducial metric, and may extend to spherically symmetric solutions as well as self-accelerating solutions in other versions of the theory where you have a cancellation of quadratic kinetic terms. And we found a new solution with finite anisotropy, and the expansion is purely isotropic. So the background dynamics is equivalent to Friedman-Robertson walker, but anisotropy appears in the Strickelberg sector and it can be probed by metric perturbations. So the signature of this would be a breaking of statistical isotropy in the power spectra, for instance. And we didn't do the calculation, but we expect it to be of the order of like mg over m Planck or subpower, like the square of mg over m Planck square. So we expect it to be very, very small. And we are still working on, we're actually finishing the paper on the study of cosmological perturbations around this fixed point. And we actually know the stability conditions and the parameter set I showed you in the previous plot actually was able to avoid the ghost degrees. Where basically we are at the point where we have the dispersion relations more or less, at least we know what they are. We couldn't write them down, but we have some idea on the types of mass gaps you have for these things. So that's all I will say. Yes. Kelly.
Metric to dynamical metrics, you basically convert this thing into a bimetric theory.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're both interpreted as two metrics living on the same space.
Yeah.
Right?
Something like that. So you have one massive gravity and one massless gravity.
Right. And then is it still the case that the two are related by that coordinate transformation looking formula?
I think that this, yeah, I see. Yeah. The main point is that the Stueckelberg formalism has some meaning in the massive gravity theory when you have no dynamics, but I think in the biometric theory, the interaction between F and G you write is your theory, and there's no, I don't think there's some, it's not like a theory with broken symmetry that you start with or.
So in the biometric case, it kind of sounds, it sounds intuitive that without very special coupling of one metric and not to the other, that it would be hard to have a theory where one metric just remained flat while the other one collapsed to black hole, or one metric remained isotropic while the other one became highly anisotropic, something like that. Like I said, from that perspective, it sounds intuitive that barring very special sequestering
of metric couples, of matter couples to the two metrics, that mm-hmm. would be hard to change metrics that mm-hmm. are two, or, yeah, that there are two distinct. Yeah, in the biometric theory, like one metric basically couples to matter sector, I guess, typically. And was that a question? Sorry.
I asked, you're saying that it's hard for you to imagine that one metric forms a black hole and the other remains regular. Is that
regular? Or this thing? I'm just trying to say what is the gen? I mean, so we're sort of going through cases here where we choose a fiducial metric and then ask, are there ghosts and or what physical metrics can one find, and just trying to see what the general picture is. I mean, what's actually
Yeah.
So, I guess it was not a question. No.
Yeah, we can discuss actually. I mean, the main point, there are some attempts for finding some solutions, but there's, things are a little, evolving slowly. There are people who find some general cosmological solutions in these backgrounds, but I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't really follow some calculations. Some of them I trust, some of them I don't. So I'm not really sure. I didn't really work too much on the biometric gravity, but I have some ideas on what can be happening. But most of my point of view is from the perspective of the cosmological solutions that we discussed here. And so I'm not sure about the having a one metric being flat and the other becoming a black hole or something. That's also another problematic thing in massive gravity, by the way. Takeshi, you were saying something?
So in the beginning of your talk, you introduced these parameters that can be tuned to get rid of the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start considering the artificial ghost parameters,
this is a classical theory. So completely classical theory.
Are there any, can you even comment on social arguments to suppress those things to talk about?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's not, so basically what you're saying is that the Bluebird desert ghost can be excited by quantum corrections or something like that. Yeah, it's possible. So you need to have some kind of symmetry that should suppress those types of things. I'm not sure what would happen, but one interesting thing, I don't know how relevant this is, but in the decoupling limit, there is something that looks like a Galilean symmetry. I don't know if that can be a symmetry that could protect these things, but this is all decoupling arguments. So this is for the scalar graviton, basically. But, so I don't know how generic this is, but at this point, this is just a classical theory that we're taking as it is.
So what is your conclusion? First of all, are there new degrees of freedom or aren't there new degrees of freedom? Because at one point you said basically those degrees of freedom are not dynamical, they don't have unity.
That's at the quadratic level.
At the quadratic.
Yeah, but it's clear that they appear at the cubic order.
But then when they do become dynamical, they are unstable or dark ball spot.
Yeah. But there are other cases. So this is the self-accelerating branch having this type of problems. If you're considering, for example, a Minkowski background, then you have 5 degrees of freedom. And all of these things are proven already. This theory was built starting from a Minkowski physical metric.
So the 5 degrees of freedom, they're all healthy in the Minkowski?
In the Minkowski, there's no problem, yeah. But when you're trying to find some expanding universe, then you start ending with some problems. And the anisotropic background I was talking about, there are still some problems there. So there's no ghost kinetic term, but there are still 2 degrees of freedom with vanishing kinetic terms, which have, at the next order in small anisotropy around the fixed point, you get positive kinetic terms, but they do not have any mass, so there's some strong coupling problem as well for these solutions. So we're trying to find something that works all the time, but it's a little difficult. At this point, things have become really, really, really complicated in this line. It's just working with massive gravity. So that's why maybe going to like a dynamical theory, maybe biometric gravity or this quasi-dilaton theory or some time-dependent mass theory, these things may have some other options. The situation with massive gravity seems to be becoming a little more complicated with time.
Good, well, perhaps we'll go for lunch now. If there are any further questions, please join us at the lunch with me. Next week.
Thank you.